And you.
We're now. I'm now in day six of being at home. I was in shul Sunday morning, and then shortly thereafter received an email that that my shul and my school and the kollel were all going to not shut down. Chalila, none of these institutions have been got shut down, but they're no longer operating in person. Everything's happening in distance learning, virtually, digitally, v'chule. And so I got thinking about Shabbos and thinking about that this is sort of like I feel like I'm in exile in a desert almost. And so we'll start out with something fascinating that I initially learned about from Radeva Beshefkin. And I thought this was not well known. Maybe you'll tell me that it is. My sister seems to think it's well known, but she's also a genius and knows everything. And so I don't think she's necessarily an indication of anything. So in the early 1900s, well, let's put it this way. We have a world calendar, the Gregorian calendar, 365 days, and throughout the entire world, everyone uses the same calendar, which is incredible. It's remarkable. And you've got places that also are mocked of other calendars. In Israel, we care about, obviously, the lunar calendar, and in various Arab countries, they're mocked of the lunar calendar, and, they keep Ramadan and all the various Muslim holidays. But even when you have things like Chinese New Year's, everyone still will tell you that, today is March 20th. And no one's like, oh, today's not March 20th, today's a different day. Everyone has agreed to one calendar, which is actually like a tremendous accomplishment on behalf of the world, that we've all agreed on something. That wasn't always the case, though. It took until the early 1900s for all the countries in the world to be on one calendar. There was a thought at a certain point in time that the USSR wanted to have a 9-day work week instead of a 7-day work week, but overall, by the beginning of the 1900s, the entire world had sort of bought in and agreed to this collective Gregorian calendar. However, George Eastman, who is the head of Kodak, the Kodak Eastman Company, which my sister-in-law is from Rochester, and Rochester used to be like a robust city. Now it's not doing quite as well because Kodak's not doing quite as well. And God willing, that community should have a refuah. It's a beautiful place, although it's absurdly far away from, I guess, New York. A 5-hour drive there and back is not so fun. But I love my brother, so we did it for his wedding, and I hope to not have to go back there for a long time. And so George Eastman, whether this was entirely motivated for accounting purposes or whether there was a little bit of just like sort of, powerful people want to hold more power kind of thing. George Eastman, he was one of the most powerful, most wealthy, most notable people in the country at the time. And George Eastman comes up with this idea. He says, this is not a good calendar. And our calendar really is a mess. And when you think about it, January's got 31 days and then 28 days, but sometimes 29 days and then 31, then 30. And then July and August have 31 because Julius and Augustus shouldn't have 31 days in their calendars. The calendar admittedly is a little bit of a disaster, and the fact that everyone agreed to it is impressive, shocking, surprising. But Eastman, Mr. Kodak, if you will, says, well, let's try something different, because we have 52 weeks in the year, and it takes 52 weeks of the year in order for the Earth to travel around the sun. So instead of structuring it as 12 unequal months that are there's a whole rhyme that you have to memorize in order to figure out which one's long, which one's short, and more importantly, in his argument for accounting purposes, that a quarter is not always even. Maybe you deal with this. I don't know. I'm not involved in accounting at all. But if you look at the first quarter of the year between January, February, and March, you've got 31 days, 28 days, and 31 days. Whereas if you look at July, August, and September, you've got 31, 31, 31, 30. So there's a discrepancy of 3 days there. There's a discrepancy of 2 days there, which is kind of significant when it comes to business, when you're trying to track how much money you're spending on any given day time. And so he said that our quarters are a disaster. On top of that, Thanksgiving, and not just Thanksgiving, but Thanksgiving and President's Day and Memorial Day, they are all a mess. Rabbi Ari Kahn says that there are two holy days in the American calendar, that of the 4th of July and Christmas, La Havdil, because almost every other day that we have in the American calendar is not a specific day. It's relative to the month. When's President's Day? It's the third Monday of February. When is this holiday and that holiday? It's all relative to the month, but it's not a set day. The only time you have a set day is that of Christmas on the 25th and that of the 4th of July. And so those are really the only true American holidays. The other ones are like convenient. We want to have a three-day weekend. It's kind of like the argument that the Karaya made against Moshe Rabbeinu, that Shavuos must be on a Sunday because Moshe Rabbeinu wanted Am Yisrael to have a three-day weekend, which is like the funniest argument, but that's the argument they make. And so Lechora, Eastman is saying that Thanksgiving should always be on a set day. We should always know when Thanksgiving is. There shouldn't, like, this year, this past year, Rabbi Myers is telling me, he's like very into these kind of things, that the time period between Thanksgiving and Christmas was as long as it could possibly be. So the way the calendar worked out, there are as many days after Thanksgiving in November as possible. I guess November must have ended on a Wednesday. And so that meant more shopping days, because even though technically it's the same number of days until Thanksgiving, it's the same number of days until the 25th of December, people are like, oh, Thanksgiving comes, I got to start shopping. And so there was more shopping days, and thank God stores did well. Now we're kind of undoing that, but God willing, everyone should be okay through this little mess that we're in. And so Eastman is saying, no, we've got 52 weeks, we want to make it even, much, much more better than having these like fakakta months. Instead, we should have four sets of 13 weeks, which will add up to 52 weeks, great. And those four sets will be our four quarters. And this way, every single quarter is the exact same amount of time, each is a davar mesuyam, each exactly 13 weeks, and we can check them each and every quarter, it's all exactly the same. And on top of that, Thanksgiving's always going to be the same day, and President's Day will always be the same day. Your birthday is always going to be on a Tuesday or on a Wednesday, which would be disastrous for those who like have birthdays on Shabbos and don't like that, although I imagine over the course of time it gets better. But people who are like born on Friday the 13th, like they're always going to be on Friday the 13th. So thank God we're not superstitious, but that could be unfortunate for some people. I happen to have been born on Friday the 13th, and so I don't feel like it's so unlucky. I like to think it was a pretty lucky day. That's a Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman says, this is a little tangential, but Rabbi Nachman says that the day you were born is the day that God decided that the world could not go on without you. And so I think it's a fortuitous day. That's the whole idea of giving brachos on your birthday, that it's a day when the Kodesh Baruch Hu decided that there's a little extra mazel in the world for you, which is why you're able to be born. So with that long introduction, Eastman is trying to create a situation where we have four sets of 13 weeks. Now, we're in smart company here. We're involved in asset management and whatever else we're doing. If you have four sets of 13 weeks, what does that add up to? That adds up to 52 weeks. 52 times 7 is what? Exactly, 364. I'll save you the math. And so Eastman had an issue, because Eastman's trying to get 364-day calendar into a solar cycle of 365 days, a year. And so there's a discrepancy here. He's going to be off one day. And everyone's timing. Everyone's challenging him. What's going on? You can't be off one day. That's why, unless it's a leap year, birthdays usually jump back one day. It was Friday, and then it becomes Thursday, and then Wednesday. Then you have a leap year, and it messes it up. But we're off one day. Our weeks don't perfectly correspond to the solar year. And so Eastman says, don't worry, I figured it out. He says, we're going to have a blank day. What do you mean a blank day? Mamash, a blank day. It's not going to be Olo L'Cheshbon. We're going to have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Saturday will be day 364. It'll be the end of the year. I think he actually argued it should be in June instead of December, but we'll pretend it's December. Or the end of June. And so, you know, last day of June is going to be the 30th. Not the 30th. The last day of June is going to be the 28th, because every month we'll have 28 days. And so Saturday will be the 28th. You'll have a blank day that's not Ola Cheshbon, where there's no business happening, where no one's doing anything. I guess everyone goes to the beach. I don't really know exactly what he was planning there, but that one doesn't count. And then the next day, we would call Sunday, and that would be the 1st of July. Now, there's a really big issue here. The real issue with this plan is that if you create this calendar that skips a day, then for the first year of the calendar, we're great, we're fine. You know, Sunday to Saturday, all good. But then you skip a day, and then on what we would call Yom Sheni, they're calling Sunday. And what we would call Yom Shlishi, they're calling Monday.
Yeah.
And so come Friday, for the rest of the world, the Jewish people would be observing Shabbos.
Yeah, just like the Muslims.
What do you mean, just like the Muslims?
Muslims have Friday as their holy day.
Every week, though. I mean, every year. It's not moving. Yeah. And so it's rather challenging. Yeah. And, you know, the extended care offices will be closed on a different day of the week every year. Every year Shabbos would go from Friday, Thursday, to Wednesday, to Tuesday, to Monday, to Sunday, and then back to Saturday. It would be very challenging. And so, Rabbi Dr. Hertz, I actually don't have one here, because I don't, but before the Art School Stone Chumash was, like, the Chumash, that people literally were sending out copies of their Art School Chumash when they couldn't be in shul for Shabbos. Before that was the Chumash, it was the Hertz Chumash, I'm sure you remember.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so, Rabbi Hertz, one of the big accomplishments in his life was, in addition to his chief rabbinate, in addition to the wonderful chumash that he created and published, was that he led the charge against this happening. So actually, I'm going to share my screen because we're high tech these days, and I'll share this with you. This is from the JTA. This is a Jewish Telegraph agency. I mean, it's basically a company. It's a Jewish information company. It's still going on today. If you go onto the website, they've got a whole Jewish update on coronavirus. You'll see from the beginning of December in 1931. This is all going on around the late 1931. And the title is "Safeguarding the Jewish Sabbath." Chief Rabbi Hertz in Geneva for League of Nations calendar reform meeting. Eastman had actually gotten the League of Nations to consider changing the calendar. They were really thinking about it. It was really a potential possibility. And so Rabbi Hertz, on this article, isn't giving that much detail, but this article is just explaining that Rabbi Hertz was in Geneva fighting against it, and he fought against it. He was successful, thank God. And something that we probably don't think about very often, but is actually extraordinary, is that today is a Friday. Today is Yom Shishi. And we know 5,780 years ago and nearly 6 months, Kadosh Baruch Hu was creating animals and people and Arman Chava Sind to this day on Friday so many years ago. It's the exact same Friday. We've been able to keep track of a 7-day week every single week for the past almost 6,000 years. Which is nothing short of extraordinary. It's incredible that mankind has been able to do it, and that the whole world agrees to it, and the whole world is sort of bought into that idea. So that was actually a much longer introduction than I anticipated, but that's okay, because there's probably not going to be quite as much a back and forth. I don't know if I mentioned this in Shir, but when we did the Shir about leading up to I think it was Parshas Va'era, we talked about. We asked the question, I think you were there. When we asked the question about why Kadosh Baruch Hu was seemingly, has Moshe lied to Paro about when he was going to let the Egyptian, when, sorry, about how long the Jewish people will be leaving, seemingly Moshe approaches him and says it's only going to be 3 days, and doesn't say anything about the Jewish people going to Israel, that they're not going to come back. So I asked the question, and the Chevra did not like it that much. There was a lot of back and forth, and so a couple people people have reached out to me a few days later. They're like, oh, I listened to your shiur. It was great. But, like, tough crowd. They did not like that question. So, that's quite all right. It's totally fine. But so I'm used to a little bit more back and forth, but that's okay. So we have in our source sheet. We potentially could have this concept of having, you know, Saturday, and which would be, you know, weekend, the like quote unquote day of rest, and then Shabbos as something completely different. Shabbos being our Yom Menucha, Yom Day of Rest, but it would be totally different because it could be on a Tuesday, it could be on a Thursday. It might not actually be part of a conventional weekend the way the rest of the world experiences it. And our Shabbos could have looked totally different. Thanks to Rabbi Hertz, thank God it doesn't. But this idea of almost having two Shabboses is something that I think permeates our Parsha. This double level of Kedusha. So that's what we're going to look into. That's what we're going to jump into this day. And so, first and foremost, why does it apply to our Parsha? Because Parsha Vayakel is where we learn the Malachos of the Mishkan. And not just the Malachos of the Mishkan, but we also learn the Malachos of Shabbos. You know, the Gemara at the top in the first source in Shabbos says that you're only going to be chayev for the Malachos that you performed. We're only going to be chayev on Shabbos for the Malachos that they performed in the Mishkan. If they did not do something in the Mishkan, then it's not necessarily considered to be a halakha. And so all the 39 things that are going on, Rav Nemetzala actually in his Sefer on Shabbos asks, why is there so much detail about the construction of the Mishkan even without repeating it, and you don't need to have so much detail about how they built the Mishkan. It's not going to last. The Mishkan is not supposed to be a permanent structure. It's the epitome of impermanent. And so why does the Torah detail so thoroughly how they built all these things and all the details of it? When, forget repeating it in Vayakel and Pekudei. Just having Truma Tetzava seemingly is not necessary. They didn't go into detail about like how Am Yisrael encamped. Well, I guess to some extent they did. But why all these details that are impermanent, that seemingly are not necessary, explains Rav Nevinsel that the details in all the pratim of the Mishkan actually help us appreciate and understand the Malachos of Shabbos. And so we've got this parallel, this comparison between Shabbos and the Mishkan, and we learn the Malachos of Shabbos from the Mishkan. But there's like, what? There's a real issue here. It's an inconsistency, because Shabbos is Kvi V'Kame. Shabbos is the most permanent thing that exists in our lives. It happens every single week, whether you want it to or not. Shabbos is always going to be coming. It's always the same day. There's nothing Am Yisrael can do about it. You know, during davening, we say Mekadesh HaShabbos, and supposed to Mishkadesh Yisrael V'Azmanim. We cannot do anything. Shabbos will always come. Shabbos is wholly permanent in our lives. And yet, we're going to learn the laws of Shabbos from the Mishkan, from this traveling tent, this like makeshift Beis HaMikdash that's not necessarily even supposed to exist. The machlokes between Rashi and Ramban about whether the Mishkan was lechachila or not lechachila is not should there be a Beis HaMikdash. Everyone agreed there was going to be a Beis HaMikdash. The question was only, should the Mishkan have existed in the desert, or should Am Yisrael have gone straight into Eretz Yisrael and not needed to have a Mishkan? But everyone agrees that the Mishkan is impermanent. All of the kelim were designed to have poles in them so they could pick up and carry them. All elements of the Mishkan are designed to be put up and taken down, and it was. It was an entirely impermanent structure. So the construction of this impermanent structure is going to teach us about the laws of the permanent Shabbos? It's rather weird. That's question one. Question number two is a Gemara that you've likely heard about, whether in a song or inside. Gemara Shabbos Kuf Yud Ches. We're going to get up to it in Daf Yomi in like a lot of months. But the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. If Am Yisrael were to keep two Shabbosos, kehilchasan, seemingly, according to halakha, the way they're supposed to go, properly, if you will, immediately they would be redeemed. Immediately we'd see Mashiach, when he brings a proof of it from Yeshayah. So, I can appreciate, you know, if only Am Yisrael would keep Shabbos, then wonderful, gazum tehei. We'd bring Mashiach. But why two? Like, what we're worried, like, oh, if Am Yisrael try Shabbos and they're like not so into Cholent, then like maybe they're not going to want to do Shabbos next week. Like, why does it matter that we need to have two Shabbos instead of just one? Seemingly one should be sufficient. If Am Yisrael are ready to be Mekabel Shabbos, to recognize that God created the world, that God runs the world, Zeik L'Maaseh B'Reishis, and Yetzias Mitzrayim, that that Shabbos is one of the most fundamental elements of being a Jew. And everyone can agree to that. Everyone keeps Shabbos this week. It doesn't matter if we keep it next week also. Why is that a condition? And so why do we need these two Shabbosos? On that note, if you look at the cover, ordinarily we have like, you know, some sort of graphic picture or something. But if you look at the cover, this is something that people have been sending around. This is just very, very cool. You know, maybe we're going to some extent live this this will be the start of the Shtei Shabbosos that Am Yisrael will rest. The cover says, it's a meme going out, this Shabbat, March 21st, 2020, will be the first time in the 71-year history of the State of Israel which will not have transportation. Theaters, sports, restaurants, beaches, and malls open on the Holy Shabbat. Everything is shut. What's the first topic of this week's parsha? Moshe assembles all of Israel and talks to them about keeping Shabbos. So, anyone who tries to suggest, I mentioned this to someone, and he's like, oh, I'm not so into these like little hint things. Without question, there's no doubt in my mind, there's no doubt, this is throughout, maybe you don't want to say Chazal, but this is throughout our Torah learning in many, many contexts, that whatever's going on in the world is consistent with our parshios. The parsha that we're reading at any given time is always going to be informative and influential in what's happening. It's not a coincidence that, you know, someone's getting married, someone's having an ufruf or a bar mitzvah, and the rabbi gets up to talk about the parsha and the wedding and the simcha. The fact that you're getting married, parsha is vayakel. The fact that your bar mitzvah is parsha is vayakel has some significant connection. And the reason why the drasha has to combine the two is because there's an inherent value, an inherent lesson in this time period specifically. And maybe later on this year we'll talk about how, without question, the Moedim, the holidays, are perfectly set up for the Talik HaShanah, if you will, for the way that the world goes. And as one just sort of indication of that, when Am Yisrael stops shaving and growing sphere beards, the hockey world does the same thing, calling them playoff beards. So what the connection between those two things are, maybe we'll explore another time. But so the fact that Parshas Vayakel is when Israel shuts down and isn't operating anything on Shabbos, I don't think is a coincidence. So we're trying to get this two Shabbosos. But what's Pshat? Why two Shabbosos? My last question, which I hopefully will have a chance to, which we're not going to address fully, but to some extent, is when we talk about the 39 Malachos, the first Malacha that's discussed in Masechet Shabbos, the last on the list, is that of Hotzah. Hotzah is not like most malachos, you know, on Shabbos you're supposed to rest, so you're not supposed to cook, you're not supposed to light a fire, you're not supposed to turn lights on and off, you're not supposed to cut and sew. Okay, all these things seem to be creative activity, you're supposed to rest from creative activity. But Hotzah, and the example that Gemara in Shabbos gives, right, that you can't have an ani on one side, on the outside of the door, and a baal bais and usher on the inside, and the guy can't give the ani tzedakah on Shabbos because he would be taking something from one rishus, one domain, to another domain. That's really malacha. What creative activity have you accomplished? Why is that part of the corpus of malachos that are prohibited on Shabbos? Such an extent that Tosfos, what I gave you doesn't have the bottom of the Tosfos where he actually uses the lashon, which is why I didn't highlight it. But just to get an idea of that Tosfos talks about it, this first Tosfos in Masechet Shabbos, it's a nice long, sizable Tosfos, says, what pshat? How come we're starting out Masechet Shabbos with Hotzah, with this malacha? And it suggests all these different things that we could be learning about. And ultimately it says, Hotzah is what we call a malacha grua. Like a weak, like a lowly, a not so impressive malacha, but something still important. And maybe because people aren't going to be so impressed with it, they're not going to be so scared of it. You know, I think a lot of people can appreciate you can't cook on Shabbos. But not everyone's going to be able to say like, oh, I can't carry from here to here on Shabbos. And so that's actually how we start out in Masechet Shabbos. But still, why is that a thing on Shabbos in the first place? Why is that an Isser? And so those are our three questions. We're going to try and appreciate and understand why this connection between the impermanent Mishkan and the very permanent Shabbos. Why do we need to keep two Shabbosos? And to a lesser extent, why is Hotzah one of our Malachos? Okay, that's what we're going to try and endeavor to accomplish in the next 20 minutes or so, maybe slightly longer. So, Rav Soloveitchik addresses the connection between Shabbos and the Mishkan. Now, we had another answer that maybe we'll share at the end if we have time, because I do think that it is of value. But first we'll look at Rav Soloveitchik on top of page 2. Rav Soloveitchik says this is the top piece of Rav Soloveitchik is from his Chumash. The bottom is from a Sefer. Actually, you know, I always like to show off the Sfarim that I'm using, but to like bring 9 Sfarim with me every. The office is not always so easy. So, first of all, this Masoras HaRav Chumash is extraordinary and wonderful, and it's a beautiful combination of so many of the Divrei Torah of the Rav, so many of his Yesodos, all put into one place, all connected to Pesukim in the Parsha. Sometimes he makes the connection, sometimes the author, Dr. Lustiger, I believe. Rabbi Ganak wrote the introduction. But Dr. Arnold Lustiger, who I happen to appreciate, he was the author of one of my favorite Rav Sfarim. Dr. Arnold Lustiger. And he does a great job. And then the bottom part is stolen from Avishai David's Rav book, Darash Darash Yosef. Basically, it's the same Torah, but the phrasing was a little bit better, a little bit cleaner, a little crisper in Rabbi Avishai David in the bottom. So the Rav talks about this, and the Rav says, what's the nature of these intertwined concepts? Gufa, our question. Why is our Shabbos and the Mishkan connected? He says, the answer is fundamental. Both Shabbos and the tabernacle constitute sanctuaries. One is a sanctuary in time, while the other is a sanctuary in space. God wants Jews to establish a residence for him, both in space and in time. The Jew who has prepared properly for the Shabbat and is about to light his candles finds himself in the same position as the Jew of 2,000 years ago preparing to enter the sanctuary. On the one hand, infinity separates the human being from God. On the other hand, God is imminent and close to his people. Through tzimtzum, through self-contraction, and we can elaborate on tzimtzum if we need to, God squeezed infinity into finitude and chose to dwell among human beings, first in the Mishkan and later in the Beis HaMikdash. Shabbos embodies a similar idea. On Friday night, God pays us a visit. Lechadodi represents the Shekhinah knocking on the door. The festivals and Shabbos are different in that on Shabbos, God visits the Jewish people, while on the festivals, we make pilgrimage to the temple, we visited God. And what Rabbi Soloveitchik is teaching us, is elaborating, is explaining to us here, is that while the Mishkan is an obviously has a Kedushas HaMakom, that you're not allowed to go in certain parts of the Mishkan, that there's clear holiness that exists here. There's a Geder. We talked last year, this Parshas Pekudei, about how whenever there's going to be a Kedusha, it has to start, and whenever there's going to be an interaction with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it starts with the year, it starts with the boundary. And only then can you introduce the Ahava, can you introduce the real connection, because if you don't have a boundary, then you can't move forward. And so there's a clear boundary, there's a clear Kedusha that exists in the Mishkan, so too of Shabbos. Shabbos, there's a ton of boundaries. Shabbos, there are a lot of things we don't do in order to create that Kedusha, in order to foster that Kedusha. And what Rav Soloveitchik is, to some extent, teaching us, is that there are sort of two Kedushas. There's two ways of experiencing Kedushas. There's Kedusha in time, there's Kedusha in place. And then we'll continue in source 5, on the bottom of page 2, the supremacy of Shabbos. Shabbos and the Mishkan are two antithetical poles. Shabbos embodies the nature, while the Mishkan embodies the supernatural. When we read the story of how God gave Moshe the blueprint for the tabernacle, we encounter the word Ach, from which our sages derive that the construction of the tabernacle does not override Shabbat. We've survived 2,000 years without the Beis HaMikdash, but we could never have survived without Shabbat. In light of this distinction, God's words to Moshe at the beginning of Parshas Vayakal are apt. These are the things that God has commanded you to do them. There are two principal commandments, Shabbat and the construction of the Mishkan. However, Jewish survival is not bound up with the Mishkan. While the Mishkan is a lofty and important place, we must remember, Ach, Shabbat, which is essential to Jewish survival, is stronger. Of course, we pray that soon in our day we will experience both. That while we have this concept of Kedushas HaMakom, we have this concept of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, we survived, we've managed without it. But, as Achad HaAm has said, just as much as the Jews have kept Shabbat has kept the Jews, The number one indication of whether or not someone will have Jewish children and grandchildren is whether or not they are keeping Shabbat. And when that's not taking place, then it quickly dwindles. We lose that sanctuary in time, as Heschel talks about. And so while there might be a Kedusha that exists in Makom and a Kedusha that exists in Zman, really the Kedusha Zman of Shabbos sort of seems to take primary. But if we can appreciate that there are two kinds of Kedushos that exist, that there's two elements to it, maybe even on Shabbos there are double elements. I think to some extent is my own suggestion. But maybe the part of the lesson of teaching the Mishkan is that the Mishkan also, to some extent, was a time-bound Kedusha. Because the Mishkan did not have the same level of holiness when in transit. When the Mishkan was not fully set up, when it was not standing as a complete Mishkan, the Kedusha was not the same. And so, to some extent, the Mishkan was time-dependent also. Only during the amount of time that it was set up and standing did it have Kedushas Makom. And I think that maybe to some extent as Rav Soloveitchik describes, that when someone enters into Shabbos, it's as if they're entering into the Mishkan, it's as if they're entering into the Beis HaMikdash. For us, time is not as concrete. It's much harder to measure. And we have clocks, we have all these ways that we've learned to measure time, but places are much easier to measure. And we talk about dimensions. Time is in the fourth dimension. It's not quite as tangible for us. For some reason, Purim stories keep coming into my mind in and around this. But I had a friend when I was in my Shana Aleph, Purim was on a Friday morning in Yerushalayim, and so I had a friend who went about his Purim Suda and then fell asleep on my other friend's bed. But okay, he fell asleep and woke up at 10 o'clock at night. So he picked up his phone because that's what millennials do when they wake up. He looked at his phone and said 10 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock. 10 p.m. Friday. Oh my gosh, it's Shabbos, and he dropped it. If he'd woken up in the Beis HaMikdash, he probably would have figured it out much quicker. But time is not as easy to tell. And so I think to some extent, what Rav Soloveitchik is suggesting, and what Kadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us in this concept of Makom and Zman, is that Shabbos has both. Shabbos is supposed to feel like you're in a set place, and maybe that's actually why Hutzah is a problem on Shabbos. Why we're not supposed to do Hutzah on Shabbos? Rabbi Brand sent out, Rabbi Brand introduced an Erev game that in our new Torah in the Box program that we sort of created for this time period. It's a cute game. It's very cool. It's very interesting. You have a chance to learn about the mitzvah, the concept of building an Erev. And basically what an Erev does is the Erev takes your home, which is really the confines of where you're supposed to go on Shabbos, where you're supposed to live on Shabbos, and it stretches it. And it says, now your home is much larger, and it allows you to engage in the community. But Bikaron, Shabbos has a malacha of Hotzah. You're not allowed to leave your house on Shabbos. You're not supposed to carry outside your house. You're not supposed to really interact with the outside world. You're supposed to interact with the people inside your home. And to some extent, this coronation that we're on is like a constant Shabbos, because we're sort of always primarily interacting with those in our home and not necessarily going out, not necessarily exploring the world and interacting with lots of people. And so we're sort of in like a long-term Shabbos during this time period, if you will. But when we think about that Shabbos has sort of these two aspects even, there is a level of Kedushas HaMakom, and there is a little bit of a Mishkan happening in our Shabbos. We talk about the Shabbos table. I'm giving shiur now from my Shabbos table. The Shabbos table is like a Mishkan. I'm sorry, it's like a mizbeach. We say that our Shabbos table, we could offer carbonos on a mizbeach, or we could, make a special Shabbos meal on the mizbeach. That's why we have to have salt at every meal, just like the mizbeach always had salt. And so there's a kedushas makom that exists in Shabbos also. And when we have this duality in Shabbos, then I think that there's something there that maybe this can help us appreciate and understand what we mean when we say two Shabbosos. And so we're going to look at two different approaches to what this to this duality of Shabbos and that exists here, and sort of one little vort, I guess, if you will, on why there seemingly is a duality of Shabbos. The Maharal points out, I couldn't find exactly where, but I guess you can check me up. You can sort something now, I guess. The Maharal says, what's the gematria of the word Shabbos? So Shin is 300, Suf is 400, and Bays is 2. So 702. And so if we have a chance, we'll discuss it at the end, that 7 is always a language of completion, of wholeness. And Shabbos is on the 7th day. All creation exists within 7 to a large extent. And so 700 is really just a very large scale version of that 7. But Shabbos is not just 7, Shabbos is 702. And the Maharal says that actually teaches us about the duality that exists in Shabbos, that there's two Shabbos. It's not just a Shabbos that exists in time, or not just a Shabbos that exists in space, but that it's happening sort of simultaneously together, both. And so now we're going to look at Rav Dessler. So I have English because there's no need necessarily to look at the Hebrew Mikdam Eliyahu. Rav Dessler's beautiful Mikdam Eliyahu is wonderful, inspiring. The language is a little bit challenging sometimes. And one of his closest Talmidim, Rav Arya Carmel, wrote Strive for Truth, which is like almost a perfect translation of his Rebbe's writings because he was there when his Rebbe said them. And so he knows exactly what he was getting at. And Rabbi Carmel writes beautifully in Strive for Truth. And so Strive for Truth doesn't have all the Torahs of Mikdam Eliyahu, but when it does, I prefer to just put that on the page. Why should we read in Hebrew if we don't need to? Particularly when it comes to late Akronim. For Rishonim, for Chazal, then the original language is always Kedai. But for here, I think Strive for Truth suffices. So he says in Source 6, 6 days work shall be done, and on the 7th day a Shabbat of rest. Our rabbis tell us, if Israel were to keep only 2 Shabbosos according to their laws, they would immediately be redeemed. 2 Sabbaths means 2 levels of Shabbos. It's not sequential Shabbosos, not this week and next week. It's 2 elements of Shabbos in one day. The higher Shabbat and the lower Shabbat. Or in other words, the inner Shabbat and the outer Shabbat. They would immediately be redeemed, since if one attains Shabbat both outwardly and inwardly, that is perfection, and that too is redemption. What do we mean by the outward Shabbat? The person is not yet cleansed of his material desires, and Shabbat comes to him as a holy gift from on high. That is called the outward Shabbat. When we're not ready for Shabbos, when we're rushing into Shabbos, when we haven't properly sat and prepared for Shabbos, that's called the outward Shabbat, the external Shabbat. Shabbat is called inward when the person has Shabbat in his heart even before it arrives. Then he can contribute something of his own holiness to Shabbat. When Shabbat complained that 7 was an odd number, that it had no companion among the days, God told it that the congregation of Israel would be its companion. Israel sanctifies the Shabbat. You know, all the days of the week had a pair, but Shabbos doesn't. No, don't worry. Don't worry, Shabbat, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Am Yisrael will be your Benzut. Ben Zug will be your partner. And Rav Dessler of Carmel concludes the piece and says, even in the lower level, where the influx of holiness comes completely from above, there's still much that we have to do. Even when I'm not ready for Shabbat, when I haven't properly prepared, when I'm not sitting waiting for Shabbat, like the Gemara in Shabbos describes the Tanaim, sitting and waiting, or maybe going out and greeting the Shabbat, we have to experience the holiness of Shabbat and return it into our hearts. Thus, we have it in our power to make the outer Shabbat an inward experience. This is the task that has been allotted to us, the combination of these 2 aspects of the double Shabbat, which referred to at the beginning of this essay, and which, if Israel were to observe, would result in their immediate redemption. These 2 Shabbosos, this inner Shabbat and this outer Shabbat, has great significance, because we have some Shabbosos where we're not ready, we're not focused, we're not engaged. It would almost be easier if we pushed off Shabbos for a day. And sometimes we're so wholly engaging in the Shabbat. And I think that if we think about the life experience we're in right now, we're kind of in a Bar Kocha Shabbat. We're in a forced Shabbat. We don't necessarily want to be stuck in our homes having shirim over Zoom. But this is the life circumstance that we're in, and so we're being forced into it. But the question is, even if you're being forced into this experience, is there an appreciation? Is there something you can take out of it? There are a lot of unfortunately very negative memes going around. My family group, last year in the Zucker Steinberg family was a rough year. We lost both our matriarch and patriarch, and there's an Hashem Moshe Avonlea. My grandfather's yard site is coming up this week, and so, and at the end of the year, Someone commented, you know, 29 was a rough year. Look, you know, 2020 will be much better. And then someone sent a meme this past week saying that, you know, we've assessed and we've evaluated, and the year 2020 has been somewhat of a failure. We're just going to shut down shop and start year 2021 now. Thank you very much. Signed, management. It's like a cute, it's a nice joke, but it's also a little bit negative that, oh, this is terrible, this stinks. Yeah, it's challenging and it's unfortunate. But to some extent, we've been forced into this Shabbat that we don't necessarily want to be in, we don't want to be experiencing. But it doesn't mean that it's not, that there's not value here, that this is the outer Shabbat that we need to make internal. We need to find value in it, the appreciation of family time, of experiencing things on our own, of not doing things outwardly, but inwardly, quite literally, that, you know, whether I'm learning in the Kollel is only dependent upon whether or not I want to be, because it's very hard for anyone to force me to do so. And there are plenty of excuses, plenty of reasons why I might not, but it's kind of, to some extent, up to me. And so the appreciation of, there are two levels of Shabbat, two aspects of what we're experiencing. Not just that, you know, I'm ready for it, I'm looking forward to it, you know, people are calling it a coronation because, you know, people to some extent are on vacation. You know, I woke up and it was about 12 steps from my bedroom to my desk because, where else am I going? I'm not leaving the house. And so davening is right there, and bedroom is right there, and the kitchen's over there. It's all very, very simple, all very easy, all very close. And in some ways, that feels like a vacation. I mean, I can walk around in my slippers. B'chavod, I am wearing slippers. But at the same time, there's tremendous opportunity here. And if we can engage in that, both in the context of Shabbos and in this little time period that we're in, then I think that we'll see a geula, not necessarily, you know, the geula emes, God willing, we'll see the real geula be most Mashiach, but the geula in the sense that we're not going to feel constricted. You know, when we talk about geula in the context of Mitzrayim in Egypt, and as we're approaching Pesach, in Mitzrayim is Miloshon Metzar, from being restricted. That Am Yisrael, when they were in Egypt, they were confined, they were restricted, they were held back, and they weren't able to express themselves, whether physically or spiritually. And so a lot of us, I think, might feel constricted. Might feel like we're not able to do what we want to be doing. We're not able to go to Minyan. We're not able to go to Shir in the same way. We're not able to go to the supermarket anymore, as the local establishment in Chicago pointed out yesterday. And so we're so restricted, and we have the chance of saying, well, okay, we're in a Shabbos to some extent. We're in a mandated Shvisa of rest, of staying at home. What am I doing with that? And if we can appreciate it, then we can create that geula to some extent where we don't feel so constricted, where my living room, my desk, my dining room can actually become an open place. We'll throw it in. There's an obscure gadata in Tainis, and Rav Soloveitchik often would say that you can't write off a gadata as being, oh, it's an gadata, it doesn't really matter. And I make jokes about it also, and I probably shouldn't, but there's an Rav Soloveitchik says every agadata has significant depth to it. And so there's an agadata that Adam HaRishon, when he was first born, first created, you know, spanned the entire world. And so either he spanned, you know, I guess like east to west, he would, you know, or top to bottom, or up and down, you know, I guess from Aretz to Shemayim. And so Rabbi Friend, in discussing the Kohen Gadol, because the Kohen Gadol was to some extent always in social distancing, was always in quarantine. So Kohen Gadol lived in the Beis HaMikdash. He wasn't allowed to leave Yerushalayim. And particularly the week leading up to Yom Kippur, he would sleep in the Beis HaMikdash. He would sleep in Lishka's Parhedrin or Palhedrin. And actually that Lishka, the Kollel learned recently, had a mezuzah on it. Why was there a mezuzah? So that people wouldn't think, oh, the Kohen Gadol is in jail in the Beis HaMikdash. He's got a mezuzah. Look, you don't put a mezuzah on a jail cell. The Kohen Gadol must not be in jail. But otherwise, you probably would think that he's in jail because he's not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash for a whole week. So why did the Kohen Gadol go crazy? How come he didn't, like, go nuts that he was stuck there all the time? Because mankind, at its source, is going to span either the whole world, east-west, you know, north-south, you know, all around the globe, or man is going to span from Aretz to Shemayim. And we sort of have that choice. Some of us need to go out. We need to explore and see the world. And some of us don't need to explore the outer world. We can explore the inner world. We can, you know, bring ourselves from the Aretz all the way to Shemayim. And so the Kohen Gadol was more focused on the latter, on exploring internally and sort of reaching up to the heavens the way that Adam HaRishon did, and which is an opportunity for us as well. We're going to turn to page 4 of the Beis Yaakov. And the Beis Yaakov of Ishbitz, I don't often learn Ishbitz Torah, but basically any time Rabbi Tova Beshefkin points something out, it's usually Gevaldik, and so this is from Rabbi Beshefkin. We're not going to look at this whole piece, but Beis Yaakov says this is from Parshas Kedoshim, that we also have these sort of two elements of Shabbos. And it, sort of in the second line he explains, Sheyesh Shabbos Tata V'Shabbos Ilah. There's a lower Shabbos and an upper Shabbos. V'chol halo halosasos v'hagdaros v'chol mitzvos shehen b'shev v'yaltah says zeh Shabbos Tata. Anytime there's an inactive command, you know, people say there are positive and negative mitzvos, that's totally inaccurate. All mitzvos are positive, there are no negative mitzvos, chalila, but there are active and prohibitive, or active and passive mitzvos. Prohibitive, so you mean don't do this, or you know, passive, as in, you know, I guess stay away from this. But so active and prohibitive, all the prohibitive mitzvos that exist on Shabbos, so don't do this, don't do that, lavs, those are all part of the lower Shabbos, Shabbos Tata. And now in the fourth line, second word, v'shabbos ilah hi hamitzvos shehem bekum va'ase. And so, you know, making Kiddush and Tefillah and all of the things that are positive on Shabbos that we actively do, those are part of the upper Shabbos. And so we continue. So he says, "V'inyan haShabbos b'kum v'ase haynu b'chol pi'ilos yu aleiv b'naicha b'li tirda v'rak b'shvisa l'ratzon Hashem yisparach." And all this activity that we're doing is that you're resting, you're not occupied with other things. And you're just resting with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. You're focused on a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Tov Tor Im Derech Eretz. U'kamoshikas u'erecha Hashem Elokecha b'chol asher taseh. Achim b'emes. In reality, what's really going on? Why are there these two elements of active and passive on Shabbos? Zehu rak al hagavon u'primius b'toda. V'lezeh asher kol piskei olam hazeh hu wait slow k'dever agav. Zemekayim Shabbos bekum v'ase afi me'achol v'zeh Shabbos ilah shehi yakar mi'Shabbos tata. And so, all of the actions that we're doing are sort of creating this higher level of Shabbos. By actively doing something, we're raising ourselves up instead of being on the lower level. You could be on a lower level, you could not be doing anything and still fulfill Shabbos to some extent. The story in the Tevaria where a boy slept all of Shabbos and he's like, "Gevaldik, I haven't kept Shabbos in years, and now I'm finally keeping Shabbos." And Rav Yoel Rakovsky pointed out to him, "You didn't break Shabbos, but you didn't keep Shabbos. You didn't really have a Shabbos. You didn't make Kiddush. You didn't have a Suda. You didn't have Kabbalah Shabbos. You didn't learn. You didn't do anything. There was no Shabbos for you. You were just basically in a coma for 25 hours. That's not an accomplishment." And he continues. And he says, "V'lashon Shabbososai mora v'shtei Shabbosos echad hu shekol echam Yisrael hu mekayim guf hashvisa." And so all of Am Yisrael, in Israel, the Shabbos, there's going to be a level of Shvisa. No one's going to work. No one's doing any activities per se. Everyone is resting. And they're accomplishing that lower level, that baseline level of Shabbos. And so that's level one of Shabbos, the first of the two Shabbos we're trying to keep. What's that second level of Shabbos that we want to keep? V'Shabbos Sheini Mora al Haratzon Shenimsa Bo Adam Osa L'Chavot Shabbos K'mo Shematzinu Behider Mitzvah Ad Shlish V'Kadoma Hainu Haratzon V'Acheshek V'Hausafa Al Haguf Mitzvah U'Minyan Zeh Yesh Kama Madregos V'Chilukin Gedolin. That you could live in a Shabbos where you're not doing anything. But the higher level of Shabbos is when you're actively engaging. Because we're always going to want to be active. It's so natural for so many of us to want to go out and do. It's very hard for me to sit at home and not feel like I'm doing anything. But Baruch Hashem, I figured out a way to do something, even the confines of my own home. And so in that framework, in that context, the Beis Yaakov was explaining that on Shabbos, there's the passive piece, the lower level, and the higher level of Shabbos is when you do the active things. You don't just stop. You don't just go into a coma. You don't just sleep. You don't just hang out and read something mindless. But you actively do something holy. The higher level of Shabbos, that second level of Shabbos that Am Yisrael is supposed to engage in, is actually really accomplished by going out and doing something. But what are you doing? You're doing Ratzon Hashem. You're doing something as part of your Avodas HaKodesh. And so to continue just a little bit further, we had this higher Shabbos and this lower Shabbos. I want to wrap up and then sort of take it one step further. There's a meme going around. I put it on the bottom of page 4 that says, "Your grandparents were called to war. You're being called to sit on your couch. You can do this." which is cute, it's funny, but to some extent, it's actually very challenging. You know, if we want to talk about it with the Kohen Gadol, we want to talk about it with ourselves. I can talk about it internally. I want to do. I'm an active doer. And so I want to go out. I want to be part of the world. I want to engage. And yet, I'm not able to do that. I'm not able to go out and be everywhere. I'm confined to sitting on my couch. And to some extent, not to say that it's easier, chas v'shalom, because war is awful and challenging and terrible, but there's an element of war that's active, where you're doing something right now, and that's geschmack, that I feel like I'm accomplishing. And I don't always feel like I'm accomplishing. I don't always feel like you know, when I'm sitting at home, that I'm really supposed to be doing something. You know, I've reflected the past few days about how I felt, how I've been living. And thank God, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm accomplishing a lot, I think. But I don't feel the same level of accomplishment, even though I think I'm actually sort of on paper doing more than I have in the past because you know, I'm not traveling, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, I'm not getting distracted by the same things in the same way. You know, my commute is about 7 seconds, and I've got sort of everything that I need right here, thank God. And yet, most days when I go into Ida Crown, I feel much more accomplished being in the cold than I do right now. And I think to some extent, it's easier to feel accomplished when you're going out to war, when you're out to do something, when there's a call to action. But here, there's to some extent a call to inaction. And a lot of people have been talking lately about how this is a chance. I'm trying to remember who it was. It was Rabbi... Oh, I wrote it down. Rabbi Uren Reich, who is Rosh Yeshiva. He said so beautifully that, you know, he's always so impressed with Hatzalah members. Hatzalah members are these incredible people who drop everything to run and save someone's life. And he says, you know, Bamas, you have 7 minutes to respond before there's a real concern that anything bad will happen. You've got time for most cases, and you don't need to run. You don't need to drop everything. You don't have to run outside in your pajamas. You really could, you know, put on a shirt, and you'd be okay. And the guy would be okay, you know, and he would survive. But so serious are the Hatzalah members about Pikuach Nefesh that they're not willing to do that, that they're going to run out in their pajamas so that they can do the very, very best possible hishtalbus, best possible effort into saving someone's life. And he says, we all are Hatzalah members right now. We're all Hatzalah in the sense that we're all holding back. We're all not going out and not risking anyone else's life. We are fully engaging in trying to keep other people safe, keep other people alive. And so that doesn't feel as robust, doesn't feel as good, but it doesn't make it any less true. And so the last page kind of talks about this feeling of wanting to accomplish. It's very easy to feel accomplished. I think it's easier, at least, for me to feel accomplished when I go out and I do. When I, you know, I get dressed in the morning, and I go to davening, and I go to work, and I'm doing all the things that I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm actively engaged in all those things, I think it's much easier to feel that geschmack. But Shabbos, actually, to some extent, is the opposite. So we're actually going to wrap up and then just end with this last piece. We're going to wrap up. We asked three questions. We said, what's pshat with the connection between the impermanent Mishkan and the permanent Shabbos? And we explained that it's kind of teaching us that there are two levels of Kedusha. There's Kedusha Samakam and Kedusha Sasman. There's a sanctuary in time and a sanctuary in place. There's Salvichik described. You know, we skipped Rav Heschel, Abraham Joshua Heschel, but Heschel talks about that a lot in his book, The Sabbath, that of Shabbos being a sanctuary in time. But not just that Shabbos has a sanctuary in time, but Shabbos has sort of a dual aspect to it, that there's almost like a place that exists within Shabbos also. And Shabbos almost actually existed in two different places. Shabbos almost existed both on a Saturday and during the week, if not for Chief Rabbi Dr. Hertz. And so thank you, Rabbi Dr. Hertz, from beyond. We really appreciate the effort you put in there to keep Shabbos on the weekend. But Shabbos has this dual aspect to it, that we're supposed to keep two Shabbosos, and not as we saw both from Rav Dessler and the Beis Yaakov, that not to say that we're supposed to keep two sequential Shabbosos. Maybe that's pshat to some extent, but not to say more accurately, but seemingly what it's getting at is that we're supposed to keep two Shabboses, two elements of Shabbos within that one Shabbos. Shabbos, according to Rav Dessler, that's external and internal, where we're active, we're engaged, we're excited, we're about it, where we're, and you know, to extend a little bit, we're going out, where we're doing all the conventional Shabbos things, we're going to Kabbalah Shabbos, you know, couple weeks ago, I had one of those super busy Shabbosos where I had a Friday night Oneg, and then, well, we went out to dinner, and then a Friday night Oneg, and then there was a Shalom Zachar, and then Hashkama Minyan, and speaking at the Hashkama Minyan, and then a Shir after the Hashkama Minyan, and then a Drush, and then a Drasha that I wasn't giving, but I was attending, and for one of my Chavar Hakolo, and then we had a big Kiddush, and then there was a lunch, and then a Shabbos afternoon activity with Yachad, and then Shal Shurdus. It was a very, very robust, very, very full Shabbos, where I was actively doing a lot, where I was pumped and engaged and prepared. I've been looking forward to the Shabbos for many, many weeks. Then there are those Shabbosos that sort of come in on us that we weren't expecting, we weren't ready for. The external versus the internal. And if we can engage in Shabbos, both by preparing for it and being ready for it, but even when we're not necessarily ready for it, even when we don't necessarily want it to happen, to still engage in it, to still appreciate the value of Shabbos, to not just see Shabbos as something that has to happen, something that we want it to happen, then that's keeping two Shabbosos, of being happy and engaged in it, and also of being happy and engaged in it, even when it's not so convenient. And that's Rav Dessa. Beis Yaakov of Ishbitz explains a little differently, that we've got a higher Shabbos and a lower Shabbos. This lower level of Shabbos is just the Shvisa, just the resting, that you take a nap, that you sleep, that you rest. I think for a lot of teenagers, this is how they think about and appreciate and live Shabbos. That, you know, Shabbos is a time when I can't do homework, I don't have to do homework, where I can just sleep all the time, I don't have to do anything. And I think to a large extent, that's how a lot of the world thinks, a lot of the world operates, that, oh, it would be so nice to have a Shabbos. And, you know, so many people appreciate Shabbos for secular reasons, that, oh, you put your phone away. Shabbos is not just about putting your phone away. That's base level, that's lower level Shabbos. That's only one half of Shabbos. The other half of Shabbos is the Shabbos Yilah, the high level Shabbos, that you're actively engaging, that we're always looking to do, we're always looking to be active, to get off of our couches and go out to war, if you will. Not war, mamish, chalila, but to go out and do something, to go to a Kabbalah Shabbos, and to a Shalom Zachar, and to an Oneg, and to have tefillos, and to have kiddushes, and to have a farbring, and to do whatever Shabbos activities we exist, that we appreciate, that we feel, to go to that Shabbos afternoon shir, that's so gishmak, that we so look forward to, that's the high-level Shabbos. That's how we take the actions that exist in our daily lives. We're always going to eat. We're always going to go out of our homes. But on Shabbos, when we leave our homes, we're going to work, which has tremendous value, but it doesn't have the same level of Kedusha as when we leave our houses on Shabbos. We're always going toward Kedusha. We're always going toward Tefillah. We're going toward a Shir, to Talmud Torah. We're going to Oneg Shabbos, whether to a conventional Oneg, to a Shabbos meal, to something. And so that higher level Shabbos of taking the actions that we're doing anyway and committing them to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's high level Shabbos. And so while, you know, the people in Eretz Yisrael might be resting this Shabbos, God willing, that they're only keeping one Shabbos this week, and not just that, you know, we're still in this quarantine situation next week, but Am Yisrael have kept two Shabbosos, there needs to be that added appreciation of Shabbos as being a goal, of being something that we're trying to arrive at, which I think perfectly segues into our last piece. And we're going to quote the Maharal in Tiferes Yisrael, Perek Mem, where he talks about the number 7. And this is so beautiful. This is in source 8. He says, Amnam, Masha Roy Sheshet Yomim L'Malacha. They've got 6 days of work week. V'yom HaShvi Roy L'Shvisa Mitzar Atma. And the seventh day, even if Shabbos wasn't there, it should still be a day of rest. Ukvar Yadua Ki HaGeshem Yesh Lo Chalufet Stadim Shisha. We know that physical things, Geshem, meaning Gashmis, that anything physical in this world has 6 sides. V'ayodam ha-geshem shalahem v'heim. And we've got all of the measurements, all of the dimensions, and the thing itself. And so we've got up and down, amal v'mata, v'arbet stadim, and 4 sides, shehim, arba ruchos, how you doing? Great. Ki ein geshem shalahem rak kasher yesh lo shishat stadim. It's not physical unless it's got 3 dimensions to it. Everything physical in this world has 3 dimensions. V'yesh od gvul nivdal le'atzmo. But there's another element, there's another measurement that exists. Not measurement. There's another component to all physical objects. V'hu ha'emtzai. And that's the thing itself. Shehu nivdal le'atzmo. It's its own thing. V'ino note lo l'imim v'lo l'smo, lo l'fnim v'lo l'achor, rak omid be'emtza. This thing that's internal. If you imagine a box or a cube. A cube has 6 sides. So there's the 6 sides, but the number 7 is not something distinct, something outside of those 6 dimensions. It's actually the cube itself. Vanheim saw as them is Siakas, the Geshem, Kamoshisha, Sudden. It's not measurable in the same way that the six sides are. Yet Sudden, Shisha, Yishlehem, Rokok, they've got a length, Vera Rokok, who get her at Geshem. But length is only a physical manifestation. Ulakach, Al Shisha, Tzadim, Yomar, Shehem, Tzadim, Gashmiim, Aval Haim, Soi, Bipnesha, In Lo Rokok, Lo Yomar, Alav, Shehu, Gashmi, Mi, Beatzmo, Umsiakes, El Bilti, Gashmi. This thing is beyond Gashmis. It's beyond measurement. It's beyond dimension. It's beyond physicality. It's spiritual in a sense. Even a die or a box, you know, a computer, a book has a spiritual element to it that of its essence, and not just the physical manifestations of, you know, you're describing a book, and you know what is a book? A book is, you know, describing, you know, a great piece of literature. Maybe not a great piece of literature. We'll talk about Harry Potter, which has its own value as literature, great or not. I don't really care. Harry Potter, if someone says, you know, what's this book? What is this book? You know, I could tell you, well, you know, it's about 10 inches tall and about 6 inches wide, and the depth is. And you'll interrupt me and say, no, I don't care about what the book looks like. I don't care about the dimensions. I want to know what is the book? What is the essence of this book? And then I'll tell you that Harry Potter is a coming of age story. Harry Potter is the story of someone who you might not think is special in any way, shape, or form. That anyone can be special. Harry Potter is a story of friendship, of love, of family. Harry Potter is so many things to so many people. And that's its essence. That's its number. That's the seventh in Harry Potter, and the seventh that exists in everything in this world. And the Maharal continues in the next paragraph, and he says, "The kashir bar Hashem yisbarach es ha'olam hagashmi. When Hakadosh Baruch Hu created the physical world, hine kemoshi yesh legeshem shestadim shehim stadim gashmiim, kach hu lebrias olam shishayamim. So too, not just that objects have six dimensions, but the days of the week have six dimensions. There are 6 days of the week." Shibo Nivra Olam Gashmi. That's how the world was created, with 6 days. The Yoma Ashvi Bo Shvisa, but on the seventh day there was a rest. The Lohaya Bo Havaya, or Asiya, there was no active thing happening. Vizek Negada Msoi Sheino Misiakas the Geshen. There was no creation going on Shabbos. Instead, there was an essence being built into the world. We had 6 days of creating dimensions, of creating things that are tangible, 6 days of Maisa Bereishis. On that seventh day, Kadosh Baruch Hu, after forming the six dimensions of the box, he shtupped. He put Shabbos in as the essence of what we're actually dealing with, what we're actually trying to accomplish. That on Shabbos, we're not creating anymore. We're not measuring anymore. We're not looking at and then saying, what have I accomplished? What have I done? What am I doing? What we're doing is we're saying we're just living in what exists. We're just being to some extent. And Dr. Abraham Joshua Heschel puts it so beautifully. He says, all week we may ponder and worry whether we are rich or poor, whether we succeed or fail in our occupations, whether we accomplish or fall short in reaching our goals. The Shabbat was given to us by God for joy, for delight, for rest, and should not be troubled by worry or grief. All week, for so much of our lives, I can definitely at least say personally, we worry about, am I good enough? Am I doing a good job? How am I doing? And measuring ourselves and trying to measure ourselves. You know, mindfulness, this thing that's so popular these days, is really about, you know, where am I at? How am I doing? Am I moving toward the goal that I want to accomplish? And Shabbos is about saying, don't worry about that. Don't worry about what you want to do or what you need to do. You know, let everything be put aside, everything go away. And just be here. That you've arrived at this place, you've arrived at this time, you're here. Enjoy it, appreciate it, engage in it. In this time period where we're so, unfortunately, forced into Shabbos, we have the choice, like Rav Dessler says, of engaging the Shabbos, of making something of the Shabbos, or not making something of the Shabbos. How do we make something of that Shabbos? To not spend all of our time complaining and worrying about, oh, I wish I wasn't here. I wish I didn't have to be at home during this corona quarantine. Instead, to say, no, I'm here. Shabbos, this is the essence. The essence of my life experience at this moment is that I'm home. And to actively engage in that, and to be part of it. To allow yourself to be influenced and to be overcome with Shabbos, of a lower Shabbos and a higher Shabbos, of being here, but also of saying, okay, I'm going to make the most of this situation. I hope this has been helpful. I hope this has been thoughtful. This definitely, I think, to some extent, at least been cathartic for me to just talk and think about Shabbos and the ramifications of Shabbos that exists in our minds on the current life situation that we're dealing with. So I hope you have a wonderful Shabbos. Yashar Koach for learning together. And God willing, we'll speak soon. And God willing, next time we speak, we'll not be over Skype. It won't be over Zoom. It won't be virtual, but we'll be sitting together. One another, upon him, and be able to engage much deeper and much fuller. But for the time being, have a wonderful virtual Shabbos, and may we engage, may we appreciate, may we experience both that double Shabbos, the Shtei Shabbosos, and therefore bring the Geula. Shabbat Shalom.